This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The film Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, is being screened Thursday at the Kalamazoo Public Library. Coming up, we'll hear from representatives of two groups in Michigan advocating for a single-payer healthcare system. But first,
Matt Longjohn emerged from a field of four Democrats to win his party's nomination in the 6th Congressional District, and now he is challenging longtime Republican Congressman Fred Upton in the general election. Matt Longjohn, thank you very much for being here.
Gordon, thank you for having me back.
So tell us once again about yourself and what you would like to do if you do get elected to Congress.
Sure. I'm a fifth-generation member of this community, coming from a farming family, a military family, a working-class family. My dad was a janitor. My mom was a teacher when I was young. And I went on to medical school, became not just a doc, but a public health guy. And in fact, I've had a non-traditional career. I don't see patients with stethoscopes and things like that. I've been working on community health and community health research and innovating new ways to lower healthcare costs, improve people's healthcare, improve people's quality of life. For the work that I did as the first ever national health officer for all the YMCAs in the country, I was named one of the top 100 innovators in healthcare in America. And I was convinced to run against Congressman Upton for this seat, the 6th District in Michigan, because I became convinced that you couldn't live your healthiest possible life if Congressman Upton continued in Congress. He's already been there 32 years, and we need new leadership.
So there's been a lot of talk about access to health care in this campaign, as well as others. What about that other part of it, though, that you just mentioned there, reducing health care costs? What is the way to bend the cost curve down at this point?
Yeah, that's what I am known for nationally, working on healthcare innovation, is actually improving the quality of care while reducing disease and disease burden and saving money. My team was the first team in the history of the United States to create a community jobs program that focused on preventing illness, specifically preventing diabetes. We were able to, through a community health worker jobs program, prevent between 58 and 71% of new cases of diabetes, which, no surprise, resulted in a huge cost savings to Medicare, a 5-to-1 return on investment for Medicare. So when we talk about bending the healthcare cost curve, it's by getting upstream, by unlocking the value of community in our healthcare system, and connecting people to preventive services to avoid costly diseases before they ever get started.
What does that look like in public policy terms?
It's great. So first of all, you cannot cut coverage in insurance plans for essential health benefits, which often includes screening exams, mammographies, blood testing for glucose, for diabetes, et cetera. You know, people talk about the concern we all had when Congressman Upton wrote the Upton Amendment and helped move the Republican health care plan forward last year to cut coverage for pre-existing conditions and essential health benefits. It wasn't just coverage of ambulance rides to emergency rooms. That was troubling enough. But it was also going to cut things that would help us save money, like preventive services, like helping people get into preventive services at the lowest cost and earliest opportunity to avoid costly diseases up front. Medicare spends about $1 trillion a year, and 40% of that goes to the treatment of healthcare concerns for people with diabetes. If we can prevent 58 to 71% of new cases of diabetes by creating community health worker jobs and preventing diabetes in the first place, that's the kind of policy that we need to be focused on.
Regarding the economy, the unemployment rate is low right now. The stock market is up. Why should voters feel that it's necessary to make any big change to economic policy?
It's not an equitable distribution. When you talk about the stock market being up, you know, only 50% of people in the country own any stock. So the economy might be doing well for folks who have always done well, but because of new tax policy, because of 30 years of tax policy, most recently the December tax bill that was passed as well, the trickle-down economic theory that we've been following is consistently giving more and more advantage to fewer people, and more people are working harder to make ends meet. Those are the folks that don't own stock. Those are the folks that are not participating in the economic recovery. And not all jobs are created equal. When you talk about the unemployment rate being low, many of those jobs don't have wages that cover the basic necessities of life. We've had wage stagnation for 30 years in Southwest Michigan, coincidentally, the amount of time that Congressman Upton's been in Congress. And we have not seen people's quality of life or ability to plan for a dignified retirement or their kids' education become any easier. We need to make sure that we aren't just taking care of the 1% and the corporate folks and planning on trickle-down economics working for us in the future, but we got to fight for people's basic needs to be met through a minimum wage of $15 an hour. Can't leave the tipped employees behind. And we also have to make sure that the benefits that go along with wages for health insurance, et cetera, are also added onto that so that people can meet their basic minimum daily needs.
Can you give me a broad sense of how you would want to structure the tax code? And understanding that even if you're elected to Congress, you're going to be one member of 435 in the House, and you don't get to decide these things unilaterally.
Correct.
But do you think we need more tax brackets? And do you have a number that you would say set for like the highest percentage that people should, the highest marginal rate that people should be paying on income?
So, you know, the tax brackets that we have had in place since December, really, you know, they were supposed to be simplified and they weren't. Just the percentages were changed around. You know, the biggest focus of the tax policy change in December was on the corporate tax rate. And I think that you could see a legitimate argument for having reduced the corporate tax rate. I was not opposed to reducing the corporate tax rate. What I was opposed to, and what I remain opposed to, and what I would work on in terms of tax policy, is making sure that because we just gave this huge kickback, essentially, to corporate America by reducing those corporate tax rates, that we also have to go back in and do what was promised. Close the tax loopholes that exist, the subsidies and the ways that corporations can get around paying any tax to make sure that even though we've reduced the corporate tax rate, that it's an effective tax rate. Right now and in the past, whatever the corporate rate was, because people have great accounting techniques and great professional accountants, they're not paying the effective tax rate. And so I want to go back in and make sure that we close those corporate tax loopholes for big oil, big gas, and other cash-rich industries that didn't need all of what we gave them and certainly can pay their fair share by closing those corporate loopholes. That would go a long way to keeping my kids from having a new $1.5 trillion of debt added on to their future, which is what we did, what Congressman Upton did as part of the conference committee, one of the last 9 members of Congress, to help shape that tax bill.
On immigration, do you favor eliminating the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office, also known as ICE?
I think that we have reached a point where we are going to have to shut it down and reconstitute it. There's no doubt that in the federal government's authority, that something like ICE, something that manages our customs, something that does provide backup to the security on our border, is within the purview of the federal government to have, and that it is a requirement for our sovereignty, et cetera, that we have an agency like that. But I believe that whether you're thinking about sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, or even the human rights violations that we've seen on the border this year, or the criminalization of refugees and the separation of families, that the entity known as ICE has essentially caused a lack of faith, a lack of trust in mayors and in governors and in sheriffs and in attorneys general. And I think that no matter what we call whatever agency works on our borders, it can't be known as ICE, and it's going to have to be reconstituted with policy that prevents any future zero-tolerance regulations.
More broadly on immigration policy, what are the right ways to have people come into this country legally? Should we be increasing or decreasing the avenues available for legal immigration? How much should we be putting in to security?
Yeah, I think that Congress had a really good approach going in 2013. There was a bipartisan comprehensive immigration policy that was drafted. It passed the Senate with a supermajority. It dealt with national security. It dealt with refugee status. It dealt with the Dreamers, the DACA program, et cetera, making pathways to citizenship permanent, and also recognizing that our economy needs more immigration to be able to support things like the Social Security program that we have. You know, right now we have too few workers to support the Social Security program. And so bringing people in through legal pathways was a part of that policy prescription in 2013. The only reason why we don't have that in place now is because House Republicans in 2013, 2014 did not want to give a victory to the Obama administration. And you know, again, Congressman Upton is one of the five longest-serving members of the Republican House. He's been voting along party lines, not along the policies that he talks about, for at least 8 years. He has a 98-99% voting record with Speaker Ryan or the Trump administration most recently. And so, you know, when we talk about immigration policy, we only need to look back at what we could have had in 2013, tinker with it a little bit to make sure that the new zero-tolerance programs that were attempted this year cannot be implemented because they were human rights violations.
On your website, at one point, one of the categories is standing up to Trump. And quoted in here, it says that Matt has spent 20 years building coalitions built on trust and shared values. If you are elected to the United States House, it is possible that Republicans may still have control, and probably a little more likely they would still have control of the Senate. Regardless of what happens there, there will be a Republican president, and most likely it will still be President Trump. So can you build coalitions with President Trump if you are in Congress representing the 6th District?
Yeah, I think that you can, but I don't think that Trump is the negotiating power that a member of Congress is likely to be dealing with. I think it's going to be more colleagues across the aisle or within the same party who have shared interests. And what you know, you see, whether it's in terms of the budgeting process, where the Trump administration consistently tries to zero out things that Congress knows we shouldn't be zeroing out, and then they come back and put more money back into these programs, that the negotiation that's really happening is between the executive and the legislative branches. Within the legislative branch, I believe that there is a tremendous opportunity and that there will be an even greater opportunity after November to create the kind of coalitions that can put people-centered policies first and provide a resistance to President Trump's agenda when it is, as has been the case in a number of cases, a number of issues, not rooted in law. You know, it was a violation of human rights, what happened at the border. The legislative branch needs to step up and do its job, which constitutionally is to provide a check and balance to the executive. When the executive is wrong or not following the best interests of the people in this district, I'll be standing up. And I believe that there will be people from across the country doing so as well.
Why do you think that there's a greater opportunity after the November election for people in Congress to find common ground? Because there hasn't been a whole lot of that, well, for a number of years, frankly, in Congress and in the House or Senate.
I am incredibly encouraged by what I'm seeing across the country in these midterm elections. You know, every one of the 435 House seats comes up for election every 2 years. And the kinds of changes that we're seeing in this district, across the state of Michigan, and across the country give me the idea that we're going to have a different kind of Congress moving forward in 2019 and 2020. Whether we see the control of the House flip or not, we are seeing more women, more people of color, more people who are outsiders to the political process jump in, like myself, who have an idea of evidence-based policy as being what we need to be moving forward with and not hyper-partisanship. I think we need a new generation of leaders on both sides of the aisle. I think that 32 years is too long for Mr. Upton to have represented this district without being tied down with strings that are making him vote in ways that aren't in line with the interests of families all over this district. But I also think that folks like Nancy Pelosi have been leaders of the Democratic Party for too long. I have said and will say again that, you know, I won't support Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House if the Democrats win control. We need a new generation of leadership on both sides of the aisle to get things done. And I think that we're going to be in a better place to see that happen in response to President Trump's administration.
Matt Longjohn is the Democratic candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. He is challenging Republican Congressman Fred Upton in the general election in November. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.